Hello there, we're Vincent Elliot McNally.
Yes, the great-great-grandsons of map-making mogul, Rand McNally.
We've recently released our family's first almanac in over 50 years, and now we're setting out on a new journey.
Using Rand's old travel journal as our guide, we're visiting his 20 all-time favorite towns.
We'll be counting down the greats as given by our great-great-grandfather, and want you, the listener, to come along for the ride.
In a show we call These Parts, a podcast putting towns on the map.
Hello there, listeners, and welcome to another episode of These Parts. I'm Vince McNally, and with me this week, as he is almost every week, my brother, my friend, my traveling companion, Elliot McNally. Elliot, good to be in the South again. In the summer, I feel like I have to be around the heat even more. Like, the closer to the equator that we can get, the better.
I know what you mean, Vince, especially from coming off the coattails of last week. Where we didn't need coats at all up in Alaska, and just getting away from the West Coast because, you know, I don't want to start off this episode on a sour note, Vince, but I kind of have to.
Have to is such a strong word, Elliot, but I'm all ears.
So last week you said that Alaska was the 50th state. Sometime in the beginning of the episode, I didn't correct you. We just had a great guest. I wanted to get through the episode, but Alaska is actually the 49th state. Hawaii is the 50th. And so people have been really pissed about this on social media. Hawaiians, Alaskans, Puerto Ricans who hoped they would be the 50th state, Guamanians, Filipinos, you know, a lot of people are mad at us right now.
Yeah, I think the Guamanians have been mad at us for some time, but that's,
yeah, that's
neither
different,
here nor
different
there.
Story.
We've gotten more angry letters than we have listeners,
yeah.
Which is weird. It means people who haven't listened to the show are angry and they're writing in. It's my bad. That's all there is to it.
And I don't know how they've been hearing these episodes because we're going to release them all at the same time. So I wanted to ask you, have you been releasing parts of our audio tracks on social media? I want to know how these people have been getting their info.
Yeah, no, that's right. I've been releasing the full tracks to any number of TMZ. If you ever heard of TMP, it's like TMZ for podcasts. And they pay me $5 per tape, and I've been selling them to them.
Oh, okay.
Well, so we know. Now we know.
Interesting. I think for a whole debacle that is predicated on a lot of misinformation, it's fitting to be in the town we're in today.
You couldn't have said it better, Elliot. We're in a town called Fox, South Carolina. That's P-H-O-X, Fox. And it's an interesting town indeed. We should put it on the map.
Let's do it. So, listeners at home, take out your Tab Presents, the Rand McNally map, and take out your medallions if you have them, but we did sell out of those super quick, so you could also take out your crushed Tab Cola cans in reminiscent of the medallion. Get ready to stick it in Fox, South Carolina. Vince, could you elaborate a little bit more on why we're here today?
Absolutely. Now, as you know, we are traveling through our great-great-grandfather Rand's top 20 favorite towns. We're all the way to number 5, and this is an interesting one because this coastal South Carolina town got swept up in the fad in the American past around the turn of the century called yellow journalism, and it had everything to do with the Spanish-American War. Not only were some of the first shots fired here in Fox, but some of the last shots were fired here in Fox.
Our great-great-grandfather Rand oversaw peace negotiations with the Spanish at this time, but still, because of this yellow journalism, people still fervently believe this war is happening in real time right now. Listeners, if you're still with us after that lengthy explanation of what this town is, we don't blame you if you've already turned off the episode. Please continue, because we have quite the guest with us today. He is the great-great-grandson of one Theodore Roosevelt, and he is looking to reestablish the Rough Riders. Sir, can you introduce yourself?
Howdy. Name's Thumbert Roosevelt.
Thumbert Roosevelt. It is such a pleasure. You know we're history buffs, sir, and we idolize the Roosevelts. They are among the greatest American patriots, and that makes you, sir, among they.
Well, you know, I appreciate that. I take great pride in my heritage. You know, as my great-grandfather used to say, walk softly and carry a big stick, but even better, carry that stick atop a large horse.
Ah, so you often hear the first part of that quote, but not the second. Fascinating.
That part is passed down as sort of private family knowledge. It's horsemanship is in my blood.
And that also feeds really well into Rand's famous quote, Mr. President, please stop chasing me with that stick on your large horse.
Yeah, that sounds like Pappy, all right. Son of a bitch. Yep, you had it right, though. I am inspired by the Rough Riders. I run the local chapter, the Rough and Tumble Rough Riders. I'm the commandant.
So what are you guys looking to rough ride? What is your main mission here in the Rough and Tumble Rough Riders in South Carolina?
Well, I mean, obviously, we got to protect our borders from the Spanish. Because...
Sure.
And, you know, their coalition with the Cubans. The war rages on. It's been a long campaign. To be honest, it's been a little quiet on the southern front lately. But we're ever vigilant because you know, if there's one, you know, as my great grandpappy used to say, the Spanish are both swift and silent, just like a big stick on a unhoofed horse.
The horse would be hoofless in this metaphor, so as to travel silently.
Oh yeah, a lot of people don't know. That's actually why they put hooves on horses, because else. They move in total silence.
You're not talking about the shoes, yeah. You're actually cutting the hooves off the horse. So they're walking around like kind of on nubs.
That's just a little bit of Rough Rider slang. We call horseshoes hooves on purpose.
I see. Now, it's making a lot more sense, and then just a little less at the same time. But before we get too far down this dusty trail, why don't you go ahead and stick this Tab Presents Tab Cola can... it's been crushed, and it's perfect medallion size. If you want to just stick that in Fox, South Carolina.
It would be my pleasure, and I would like to dedicate the placement of this crushed can to my great-great-grandmother, Mama Roosevelt.
We all are fond of her. Anyone who's a friend of history is a friend of Mama Roosevelt. Oh, well done. Well done. All right, it's snug in there.
Thumbert, can you tell us a little bit more about...
Please, call me Thumb.
Thumb. I mean, I feel like we're friends already. And you actually made Vince and I honorary Rough and Tumble Rough Riders. We have big 10-gallon hats. It's kind of hard to sit in our RV with them on right now.
But these kerchiefs are positively stylish, I must say.
Well, thank you. I mean, you'll note the pattern is a series of big sticks and soft horses.
It is.
And those 10-gallon hats, those are verified. The volume is exactly 10 gallons were you to fill it up with some sort of liquid.
Man, I think I might want to fill mine up with some kombucha. What do you going to fill yours with, Vince? I mean, 10 gallons exactly. You could have anything.
I'm going to go with anything but kombucha.
I filled mine up with sarsaparilla.
Hey, oh, that's good. Yeah, that's nice. That's fun. Hey, I've got a question, and I hope not to touch on any nerves, Thumb.
Please, you call me Thumbert.
But of course. Of course, my mistake. Thumbert, sir, I don't want to step on the toes of those stylish snakeskin boots you got, but there are conflicting reports from the rest of the country about the state of the Spanish-American War. Basically, the size of it is that it's been over for 130-some years.
You know, we're not blind to that. We have Twitter. But we don't trust it nearly so much as the local paper, the Dusty Gazette.
The Dusty Gazette. And so we broached the heart of the matter. Let's talk about that paper. What are your feelings on the publication?
The Dusty Gazette is the most trusted voice in newspaper publication. I mean, you can't go anywhere else for the facts. Anywhere else, you know, you can type anything on a computer, but on paper, you can't lie. And the Dusty Gazette is all hard copy typeset ink and paper.
All made by one Dusty McAfee, right? The editor-in-chief of Dusty Gazette.
That's right. He's as dusty as he sounds.
An interesting factoid about the Dusty Gazette, it's passed down editorship by first name lineage. So various Dusties from various families take up the mantle as editor-in-chief.
And it's a real problem because a lot of people in the town, you know, they name their child Dusty in hopes that they'll one day get what is, I'm going to be honest, the most lucrative position in the town. I mean, the newspaper business is thriving here. So it's real confusing when you're doing, you know, you're trying to get to know kids on the playground and every third one's named Dusty. But, you know, that's life in Fox.
It is a lucrative paper. It's 6 issues a day. Normally a newspaper being a once daily issue, sometimes a morning and an evening post. Here, you can get updates every 4 hours.
That is true, and it's sort of been a blessing and a curse because all the local forest has been cleared in order to produce paper for the newspaper. But the upside of that is that's more open plain for the Rough Riders to go rough and tumble riding about.
Is that kind of your immediate reaction when you get an update from the Dusty Gazette about latest happenings from the Spanish-American War?
Yeah, my first thought is, well, there's one less tree to get in the way of my hooved beast, Wilma. And then my other thought is, yeah, goddamn, the Spanish.
Right. So the current leader of Spain is whom?
That's correct. His name is Hum Dominguez.
Short for Humberto.
Correct.
Yes.
I've got an afternoon copy. Now, this is a little outdated because it's been off the presses for all of 5.5 hours. But let's read a couple of headlines from today's paper to give us just sort of an insight into what the milieu of information in Fox is. And I'll start. It says, Hume declares double war. There's, after this, it's like an exclamation point and then a question mark and then another exclamation point. One war, not enough for those American bastards. So this is a recent development, and by the type size, it seems like a big one.
Well, that's sort of a feature of the Dusty Gazette, is it's pretty much always large font, because it's a large issue, and we're facing, you know, one of the largest and most powerful nations in the world, Spain.
And you can usually tell how many articles are in the Dusty Gazette based on the type size. So the bigger the type size, the fewer articles, because you have to take up page space. So this one Vince is reading is 2 pages long. The type size is, it looks, eyeballing it, about 72 points.
And just to clarify, did you read that correctly? It said that the dirty Americans? Or no, whom did?
Whom is quoted as saying that one war was not enough for you American bastards.
Oh, bless my stars. For a second, I thought it was like an editorial and someone from the Gazette was saying that, and that would have been cause to rally the boys and go stampeding on down to the newspaper mill.
How many times do you stampede per week?
Well, that's the only way we know how to get around. So basically, anytime we need to run an errand or anything, it's going to be a stampede. So I'd say as many times as the old DG drops on a daily basis.
Sure. So it's, you know, in reaction to that, but it might be like, I have to go to Walgreens and pick up my prescription or something. Let's stampede on down there.
And we know, like, well, a fair number of the, there's a bit of overlap since there's not a lot of jobs in the town. A lot of the Rough Riders actually are the newspaper delivery boys. And so you'll hear the clip-clopping of horseshoe down your dusty street, and then a newspaper will come flying through your window at great speed, and you'll hear, "Remember the Maine," and then we'll go to Walgreens and pick up like our Singulair prescription.
That all you guys have.
We all have allergies, horrible allergies of the Rough Riders. It's the horse dust.
But kick up a lot of dust.
Well, thanks for that insight. I feel like I'm starting to understand what life here in Fox is like. And Elliot, a big part of daily life is food.
That's true, Vince. I think we should get into this a little bit more in my favorite segment, of course, and I'm assuming our listeners' favorite segment, Elliot's Eats.
So listeners, my brother has a preternatural fascination with foodstuffs, and he makes it a point to bandy about this special segment that he invented every chance he gets. It's called Elliot's Eats, and he investigates the local cuisine of the towns that we're visiting.
That's true. I try to hit up some restaurants that I think symbolize what the town is all about, and a lot of times I take recommendations. What struck me about this town is it seemed like everything vaguely Spanish had an American reaction to it. So I think that probably the most interesting cuisine I've had all week is at this little shop, and they do an American spin on tapas.
Ooh, Elliot, I'm salivating. I love me some tapas.
So these are called Freedom Tapas, and basically you just get a big stack of pancakes. It's actually an IHOP is what this little shop is.
So Thumbert, that's right, I'm supposed to call you Thumbert?
Yeah, you call me Thumbert, the other one gets to call me Thumb. I like the cut of his jib.
And I'm the other one?
Yeah, well, I didn't,
okay.
I don't think you guys told me your names.
Well, we introduced
I'm pretty sure we did.
The show started
yeah, but
with
I was filling my hat. I was out back filling my hat.
Oh,
that
you're
time.
Right. So I'm Vince. Vince says Thumbert, and then that's my brother, Elliot. He'll say Thumb. Yeah.
Pleased to meet you, Elliot.
And you are now stirring the sarsaparilla in your hat with a ladle.
Well, so, yeah, you can't let it settle. It'll start to get scummy on the top.
Thumb, with your sarsaparilla, do you like to head on down to the IHOP and have some of these Freedom Tapas?
You know, I do. I love them. And you know what else I love that they serve there is, you may have heard of a Spanish dish called tres leches cake, which apparently translates to three milks. We have
now I understand what it is. Yeah, tres leches, get that out of here.
Down at the pseudo IHOP, they have the opposite of that, which is, we call a zero milk cake. It's very dry. It's sort of like, it's like if a bunch of crumbs collided, but It goes real good after a long day of stampeding around the dusty streets.
It kind of echoes the dustiness of the town. And as we all know, the opposite of three is zero. And I think that's a great example of a reaction to a Spanish cuisine.
That's exactly how I feel whenever I even think about Spain. It's just a big zero in my chest. When I think about the good boys we lost on the USS Maine.
The sarsaparilla is sort of boiling.
Yeah, you put it back on your head, so I don't know how. You must have a very tight seal on that hat to keep it on.
It's a well-sized hat, clearly.
It's fitted custom down at the haberdasher.
Yeah, mine fits pretty good. I actually popped a straw through it so I can drink it like one of those novelty beer hats.
Oh, Elliot, that's like a great idea, actually. Could you, if you wouldn't mind, like rigging mine up to do the same thing?
Yeah, hold on.
Ah.
Oh, wait, actually, what, Vince, you're going to want to stick your thumb in there. I think I made the hole too big.
Alec, why didn't you just do it the same way you did yours?
You've got anything but kombucha dripping all over your forehead.
Oh, I think this is Mountain Dew Livewire.
You know, and that reminds me of a great pairing of Mountain Dew Livewire, which is just an abundance of food to gorge yourself in. And that's exactly what Freedom Tapas are. You know, tapas in Spain are little bite-sized things you can barely fill your gullet on, but Freedom Tapas are giant, huge, Thanksgiving size portions. Isn't that right, Thumb?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And whereas tapas, it's all about sharing your portions, here in Fox, it's considered extraordinarily rude to share any of your anti-tapas.
You know, another place that I went to, I think is just a great example of conflicting Spanish cuisine is the Campbell's Soup Factory. They're here in Fox, and as we all know, gazpacho, the essentially cold tomato soup of Spain, is exactly that. All Campbell's soup that you can get there, you can get a lot of samples. They're served ice cold.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually one of our main attractions. Like, when I remember back in high school, we used to, you know, on the weekends, we'd like, want to go up to the old soup factory, and everyone would go, yeah, and, you know, we'd get on our ponies. We were younger at the time, we had ponies.
Sure, they have aged with you.
Yeah, yeah, well, they start as ponies, and then they grow into horses, as we grow into rough and rumbly men.
There's a bit of nostalgia. There's some American charm in that. Now, I'm imagining the opposites here. So instead of a refreshing tomato-based soup, you have instead extremely boiling hot. What's the opposite of a tomato? An eggplant? Like a boiling hot eggplant soup?
Well, Vince, this isn't Bizarro World. I mean, they still have taste here. It's just they've incorporated the cold soup idea, and they've twisted it on its head by making it out of the most American soup you can buy, which is Campbell's, and then pairing it with something like what is it called? A fox ceviche, which is just fried chicken, shake and bake, right?
Yeah, it's essentially you just take a fried chicken and throw it in like a plastic bag, like a Walmart bag. Just throw in some seasoning and just swing it around your head like a slingshot for a bit. And then just like you hold onto the bag and you sling it forward, and then you open up the opening and it goes skipping across the top of the picnic table. And just whoever gets it first gets to eat it.
Well, I'll be if that doesn't sound like a hoot.
The scalding eggplant is an option, though. That's on the menu. That's actually... that's part of the reason a lot of us don't have that much taste, is you just can't wait to get our lips on that scalding hot eggplant soup.
Well, I had a restaurant of my own that I kind of like to sneak in when we're in these towns, and one of my favorite all-time Spanish cuisines, not to stir up some rabble, but I love Spanish cuisine, and I love Spanish culture, and I think one of my favorite dishes is paella. And I know.
The sarsaparilla is a boiler.
I was thrilled to see that in a small town like Fox, there was a paella devoted restaurant, but it was called Paella on Your Face. And when I went in, I ordered the paella. I was expecting a delicious motley of seafoods and broths, but instead I was served an apple pie, but the top was like all open. And then there was a couple of shrimp cocktails just jabbed in there.
You're goddamn right.
I think
right.
I went to this place. So it's not paella then, Vince. It's pie-yee-haw.
I believe that is how the wait staff answered me, as every time I said paella, they said pie-yee-haw. And I said, oh, that's enthusiastic. Cool. Little did I know.
Thumb, what is your favorite varietal of pie, comma, yeehaw?
Oh, I love to head down to the pie yeehaw and get me like a nice original pumpkin pie. But right in the middle of it, they'll just have like one martini. They'll just press it down in the middle, like the base will just squish down. It'll make sort of a circular impression in the very center of the pie. So you get, you know, and there's a long straw, so you don't have to lean over the pie. It's a long straw with several loops. I guess you'd call it a silly straw, that we take these things very seriously.
Similar to one in my hat right now.
Yes. Right, yeah. That's, well, it's the same. That's the other big business in the town is the straw factory. It's basically, if you want to make a living, you go straw, soup, or Dusty Gazette.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is every bit as colorful, even if it wasn't in the exact same palette that I was expecting or hoping or even prepared to consume. But I got to say, of all of your Elliot's Eats picks, this has been one of the finer ones.
Oh, well, thanks, Vince. You know, that means a lot to me when you actually acknowledge the work that I put into this segment.
Yeah, well, don't get used to it.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case, I think we should keep rolling if everyone's tummies are full.
Yep. What a weird thing to say.
Well, I've just been watching Thumb drink literally 10 gallons of sarsaparilla, and so I think he's been satiated for one Elliot's Eats segment.
Ooh, no, that's just a wake me up. That just wakes Daddy up. We'll get going.
Well, let's get going into our next segment, Random Thoughts.
So listeners, as I alluded to earlier, we are traveling through our great-great-grandfather's travel journal, charting on our own journey the top 20 towns that he visited. We have cracked the top five, and we are now at the fifth favorite most town. He spent a long time here, several years, as he was fulfilling his duties to the American government as a diplomat, negotiator, and head of state. He spoke alongside our companion's great-great-grandfather, Theodore Roosevelt, on behalf of the nation in an attempt to cool hostilities between us and the Spanish. He details those trials here as we read from his journal directly. Elliot, if you want to de-hermetify the hermetically sealed journal for me.
Yeah, let me just breathe on a little bit. Okay, cool. And it's warming up, and now I can open it. Oh, actually, it has accumulated some dust.
Whew, man, you smell the kombucha across the room.
Yeah, the SCOBY of the kombucha actually really helps to preserve the journal in its pristine state. It has accumulated some dust, though, across this week, so hopefully you can read it, Vince.
Oh, there's a nice plume. We got the plume. We had that plume action, and let me read. Unlike many of Rand's denotations here in the journal that have been sketches, sometimes lewd and crude drawings, sometimes limericks, this is kind of a more formal detailing of the later days of the negotiations here. I'll read from it thusly. The year is 1894. I am at the end of a long wick. The folk in this town, noble, easily stirred as they are, cannot take even upon word from President-elect himself that the war with Spain has ended. They once are bloody nemesis, now a tepid ally. I seek every day to fight the misinformation of the Dusty Gazette, which say over and over again, the Spanish attack with ships on the sea, our men are sinking. But no, nay, it isn't true. There are no more ships from this town left. They, the one, was retired long ago, after one sail detached into the sea. I fear my work here is in vain, but I will labor on for as long as it takes. Signed, Rand McDally.
Wow. You know, before you start reading that, Vince, I was going to say, if you read one more of Rand's limericks, I'm going to barf, but that was sort of poetry in its own right. It was beautiful.
Very stately. He took his role in the U.S. government seriously.
I particularly admired his use of the word "o'er."
The parlance of the time, yes. He spent a long time here, and he speaks fondly of the citizens of Fox. Clearly, he had a lot of admiration for not only your great-great-grandfather, but for all of you. But what say you of his futile efforts?
Well, I mean, we've heard it, you know, through the decades. Folks come through here every now and again and try to fill our ears with lies about how the Spanish have, you know, we've reached a treaty. It's like, what are you going to reach a treaty with ultraviolet radiation. What are you going to reach a treaty with drought, famine, and flood? I mean, the Spanish are what we consider pure evil. Like, you've seen Lord of the Rings, I assume. It's kind of like Mordor. So, you know, you can talk all you want about peace this, peace that, but as long as the Spanish sail about on the seas, it's not a safe world we live in.
I think the biggest thing that Rand dealt with, and correct me if I'm wrong, Vince, because I think he wrote about it as well, is that he and Teddy Roosevelt implemented the Treaty of Paris, and people in Fox said, okay, this sounds fake. You know, we're talking about Spain, and you're calling this the Treaty of Paris? There's no way that's real.
Won't argue with that. It was a bit of a misstep in terms of the advertisement. It made it very easy for the Dusty Gazette to say, yes, we are at peace with France. France has been our long-term ally in the fight against Spain. So, congratulations. You made peace with someone we were already at peace with. You big dummy.
Exactly. I mean, we read about that. We said, Treaty of Paris, doesn't concern you, Paris. I'm sorry. Did someone talk to you, Mr. Paris, France? That's not true. This is between us and Spain.
Yeah, famously, Mr. Paris, France was not a part of these negotiations. It was strictly Theodore Roosevelt and Rand McNally on the America side.
Yeah, and there's a town in France that hates our guts because, like, they think we tried to pull them into it.
Oh, sort of like a third wheel of animosity.
Absolutely. I mean, this wheel goes round and round. When you get small towns, sarsaparilla blood to boiling, hoo doggy
indeed. Now, your position made clear. I want to use this opportunity to, you know, this is a large section of Rand's journal. Like, we could go on for pages and pages. We won't, because that's not good radio. But some of the things that he fears for is the increased militarization of this town, and with it all of South Carolina. So what sort of precautions are you taking in a modern world where you have to fight what would be the most terrifying enemy from overseas?
We've heard about the Cuban Bay of Pigs, so a large percentage of our defenses are sort of hog-focused. We basically...
Like anti-swine units.
Oh, yeah, because when you see a Spanish piggy cavalry unit coming over the hill, you better hope you laid down some barbed wire or dusty pits, or else you're gonna be pits deep in piggy, you know what I mean?
Now, enlighten me. Are these, like, again, the armies of Mordor, which would ride the pigs? Of course, in Mordor, it's like a half-pig, half-wolf type creature. But would the Spaniards be riding large pigs into battle, or are these highly trained and intelligent pigs who fight on their own?
It's sort of a blend of both. I'd say it's more comparable to the Warg Riders in the Two Towers Extended Edition. So, which are technically affiliated with Isengard and the Legions of Saruman, but allies of Mordor nonetheless. The point is, it's an intelligent, mobile cavalry/infantry unit. So yeah, you're gonna see some Spanish foot soldiers, but mostly they're there to support the cavalry, which again on the pigs, which you would think not as efficient moving as in terms of having, you know, shorter legs than horses and ponies. But what a lot of people don't know about pigs is that they have the ability to briefly burrow. So you'll see them, you know, maybe 30 yards away, and then, you know, puff of dust, which that's to be expected. But then another puff of dust, they're like 10 feet away, and they just popped up like Bugs Bunny.
I've seen that a lot of you guys on the Rough and Tumble Rough Riders will hide truffles around town, so as to divert some of the pigs as well.
Yeah, we do truffle traps. That was a development we had in the mid-1900s. And we'll sort of do like a Swiss Family Robinson thing where it looks like just a bunch of leaves with some truffles on them. As soon as like a pig's amount of weight steps on it, boom, falls down in the pit, tiger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A lot of your ideas seem to stem from the Swiss Family Robinson. Or
The only two VHSs the library has are Lord of the Rings Extended Editions and Swiss Family Robinson.
Yeah, you seem to be very knowledgeable. Something else that I noticed when walking around town is sort of a defense mechanism is that you guys have a lot of soccer nets. And I noticed I did not say football. I said soccer because, of course, the Spanish army is very well trained in kicking these balls at you, and you need to be well equipped to catch them.
That's true. It's also it's sort of a diversionary thing because we know that the Spanish can't resist an open net. So if it comes down to it, if they're if it's between making ready to receive our rough and rowdy stampede charge versus putting one in the upper 90s, you know which way they're going to go, and that gives us that extra minute, you know, to pull off the attack.
There's a lot of parallels drawn, and I do mean parallels drawn as drawn on large fields with chalk, between what would be sort of a war maneuver, like a war game, and the set piece behaviors in a match of soccer. The corner kick, very much like a cavalry charge. The indirect kick, like a feigning infantry strike.
That's very true. The Spaniards are known for flopping. Sometimes we'll ride by and whack them with the big stick. And they'll go down, caterwauling, rolling around, covering their face. And I know, I felt the impact. It was merely a bop.
Yeah. Now, that's, you know, that is a pervasive soccer stereotype. To clarify, there haven't been open hostilities with any actual Spaniards in your lifetime, isn't that correct?
Possibly true. We've definitely had some altercations with people who we assumed were Spanish. Mm. It's really hard to say, because the thing about the Spanish is they're not always, you know, open about whether they're fully Spanish.
Please, interesting. If you can, elaborate.
Well, let's say, for example, you're out on patrol, you're galloping about the dusty, deforested landscape, and you see a feller walking up the road, and, you know, he's got pretty nice hair and like a medium filled out beard, and he's got like a carry out box from a restaurant. Could be tapas, hard to say. There's really only one safe measure there, and that's to profile them and attempt to run them down with your horse or pony.
Oh!
I'm reminded of a story that I read in the Dusty Gazette earlier today of a man who was taking his groceries home, just as you said, and his pant leg, actually both of them, got caught on a loose nail and ripped them off mid-calf. So people looked at him, saw a man wearing capris, and they all flocked around him and started beating him up. They thought he was Spanish immediately.
Oh, yeah. But, that, you know, any true citizen of Fox will... And he did, is as it was happening, he went, no, I get it.
So he let the beating persist.
Oh, yeah. As, you know, growing up in this town, it's instilled in us from day one is that anyone could become Spanish at any time. You have to remain ever vigilant.
Absolutely.
I think we should remain ever vigilant in reading a listener-submitted question. Thumb, could you do us the honors?
Sure. Let me just blow this 2-inch thick layer of dust off the top.
That just accumulated in the last 2 minutes.
We just unrolled that in the dust already. With the
This letter comes from Mary Suzanne Watermans. She writes, "Hello, I'm Mary Suzanne Watermans. I would like to know, at what point will they bring the boys that are stationed overseas back home from Cuba? And I would like to know, when are they bringing the boys home?" She wrote a burp, and I did it.
Wow, this is a hardcore lady.
Yeah. Sorry, I find burps funny.
I think they're empirically funny.
They're hilarious.
We got the hard data to prove it. And so I'll finish up her question here. She wants to know, when are the boys coming home? My son, Abernathy, has been stationed with the Rough Rowdy Boys in Cuba for 150 years. I refuse to die until I know whether he's KIA, MIA, or coming home any day now. Sincerely, whatever name I said earlier.
That's one thing I admire about the Rowdy Rough and Tumble Boys is you don't look back. You only look forward. And even though her name was written only two lines above where you're reading right now, it's in the past. It's in the past. We're moving
forward. There's no rear view mirrors on a horse.
Words to live by. So can you tell us a little bit about this faction of Rough Riders stationed in Cuba right now?
Yeah, so that's the original chapter of the Rough Riders established by great-great-grandpappy Teddy Roosevelt. They're the original dream team. They're sort of the original Fellowship of the Ring, if you will. And they sort of set the tone of sort of how we do things, you know, the size of horse that we ride, the size of the sticks that we carry. You know, they're the inspiration for the whole thing. As far as we know, they're still stationed over there. We don't get a lot of correspondence. We get that. There's sea storms. It's really hard to get messages across. But we send them sort of a a newsletter, like a weekly like email blast, just in case. We just don't often hear back because they're busy. They got a lot of riding to do.
And it definitely takes a while for those email blasts to get to these people who don't have access to computers or email for that matter.
Oh yeah, we're just guessing their email address. We've tried roughriders at Gmail, roughriders at Yahoo, roughriders 1, 2, etc.
It's sort of like when you forget the code to your luggage and you have to go all the way back and do, you know, 0000 0001. You're making your way through the list as quickly as you can.
Exactly. So really it's our fault they haven't responded. It's not on them.
I think I speak for whatever her name is that you said earlier when I say, bring our boys home, gall darn it.
Careful with the language. This is a Christian town.
That's my mistake. I just keep stepping in it today. Well, thank you for writing in, and thank you for everyone who writes in. And thank you, of course, Thumbert, for reading it. Let's, Elliot, keep going with this motif. Can I call it a motif?
I think so. As clearly as the motif on your kerchief is sticks and horses.
That it is, Elliot. This motif of speaking to one another, of information. Because we're diving into a segment we call He Said, She Said.
Now, listeners, He Said, She Said is a segment we like to do in towns that have a lot of gossip. We like to hear from these citizens. We like to know what they are saying because you don't want to listen to Vince and I all the time. You have to take the townspeople's word for it. So, Thumb, what's going on around town? What's the latest from the front lines in the Spanish-American War?
Well, the latest scoop is there's a rumor going around 6 times a day that the Spanish are actually retrieving the sunken shipwreck of the U.S. Maine, which, as you know, launched the conflict originally, in an attempt to rebuild it and then sink it again.
No.
They wouldn't.
That's exactly
they absolutely wouldn't.
The kind of thing that they would do, because if there's one thing that the Spanish hate, it's that particular ship.
And you know what? I heard that they are actually using your tactics. So they're throwing a bunch of truffles in the water, kind of at the GPS coordinates of the USS Maine, sending pigs down there to excavate it.
Oh, yeah. That's the scariest part, is now their pigs have water capabilities. A dive pig, I mean, that's literally, it's shaped like a submarine. But then when it turns sideways, it's one of the most buoyant creatures. So it's really, it's bad news. We just thank God that our particular town is landlocked.
I mean, this could be a serious problem for just the ego of the Rough and Tumble Rough Riders, for America, if Spain keeps pouring their hard-earned tax dollars into excavating the USS Maine, only to sink it again.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So we're both rough and ready, so we've been developing a horse navy.
Horses can swim very well.
Yep. Ours can dive.
Can they resurface?
We're working on that part.
I see. So what sort of, this is kind of a war on morale. This is the Spanish attempting to break the American spirit with this, what I would call it, a stunt of naval superiority. What sort of things are you doing to counteract this sort of behavior?
Well, the aforementioned horse navy is sort of our primary initiative. We're also we're trying to get circulation of the Dusty Gazette to Cuba and Spain because we figure there'd be nothing more, you know, demoralizing than a paper published 6 times a day, which, you know, does not reflect well on you.
And if you guys, the Rough and Tumble Rough Riders, are the people delivering the papers, and now your horses have aquatic capabilities, you'll be able to get that to Cuba. You might even be able to get those boys home.
Yeah, it's sort of, it works out perfectly. It's kind of like an errand we have to run. Conquer Spain.
Right at the top of your list there.
Yep. And that was sort of the source of the original beef, or pork, if you will, is that we really, really lust over Spain's land. I mean, the soil, the rains in Spain do fall mainly on the plains, so that's a fertile area. And then we sent the Maine over there just to scout it out, because Cuba's kind of like the appetizer or tapa of Spain. We were just checking it out, and then boom, they blew it up, and that's how this whole thing started.
Wow, I must have missed that in my history lesson on the start of the Spanish-American War, but I'm glad I'm educated now, because I feel like a lot of this town is all about setting the record straight.
And Thumb, I have a piece of gossip that I heard. I wanted to know if you could set the record straight, because you are obviously way more well-versed in the actions of Spain than Vince or I.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
In Barcelona, there's a famous place called Parc Güell, and it is a beautiful mosaic park and buildings and structures made by the artist Gaudí. I heard that Spain is adding to Parc Güell in a big mosaic statue of Teddy Roosevelt peeing on the United States. Is this true?
It is true, and we met the news with great anger, but also some joy, because, you know, they did put the image of Teddy Roosevelt in one of their most, you know, renowned squares, which is kind of a win for us. Sure, he's pissing on America, but when you live in America, that's where you piss.
Hell yeah, Thumbert. Oh, pardon my language again. Heck yes, Thumbert.
You're excused.
Vince, did you hear any gossip while we were around town the past week?
I sure did. I heard a little bit of good news. I don't know if any of you know this, but the Catalonian region of Spain is sort of notorious, or maybe Spain itself is notorious, for preventing the independence movement of Catalan. Mm. And I heard, a little bird told me, literally, one of those wind-up birds that can play recorded messages. I listened to it in the waiting room for at the Walgreens, where I was getting my Advair prescription filled. And it said to me, Catalonia is full of infiltrated rough riders abroad who want to make this territory free on behalf of America.
Well, wow. I'm gonna have to ask you, you know, not to use this part of the recording, because I don't know who sent you that little mechanical bird, but that is a covert unit of rough riders. The rough riders. A web-based unit, a crack team.
Yeah, they're working in conjunction with Cisco. I've said too much.
Yeah, we gotta. So where exactly were you when this little birdie walked up to you and told you this information?
I have to. I'll again say, the bird did not walk up to me. The bird was like, it was sort of like a waiting room centerpiece. Like, there was the parade magazines, and then there was that little thing that the kids play with for some reason, where it's all the wires and the little wooden dowels are around them, and then you can scoot them around. And then there was like this wind-up bird, and I wound it up, and it started saying secrets of revolution from the Spanish mainland.
You know what? I'm going to have to talk with the local tinkerer. He makes all the local cuckoo clocks and other amusements, and he's related to a member of the routers. Also, those little the toys, the wooden thing with the wires, that's actually one of the principal sources of power in our town.
Children pushing these little dolls around the wires.
Yeah, it's connected to a dynamo beneath the thing. I see.
It's the kinetic energy drives a generator, and, you know, these kids these days, they got a lot of energy.
Isn't it true that they can only be on an outdated purple and turquoise carpet in a dentist's office to generate enough friction for it to work, though?
That's very true, and it helps if it's sticky to the touch.
You know, what's interesting about this, I don't want to say too much again, but usually anything associated with Spain, Fox, and America would be completely opposed. You know, like the Catalonians, who spells chocolate with an X? You know, give me a break. That's fighting words. But just the fact that the Catalonians themselves don't really like Spain, the enemy of your enemy turns out to be your friend.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's nothing more patriotic than to want to leave Spain, and especially if you are Spain. I mean, that's we tip our 10-gallon hats to those boys, and that was the first place we sent our crack team of dark web riders.
What I love is that even though this is a conflict with the roots in the past, you've modernized. I did not expect you to have a deep web cavalry unit. That presumably on horseback?
Oh, yeah. No, they're sitting on horses at computers.
Yeah, I was hoping that was the case. I was hoping that was true. And they do the info ops. They attempt to hack Spanish infrastructure and spread misinformation in Spain.
Absolutely. Yeah, the Daily Gazette, you know, in keeping with the times, has added a digital presence, their website. They're still mostly the paper, I mean, but there's only so much forest. And yeah, so that's another thing about Catalonia, is it's mostly a digital place. It's very hard to physically access Catalonia, so we had to go through the information superhighway.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know Catalonia is kind of like Tron. You don't quite know where it is in Spain. Nobody knows on a map, and you actually have to access it through the ether.
It's also like Tron in the sense that every once in a while you'd be like, is that Jeff Bridges?
Yeah, a lot of, you know, people think that Spanish people may have a darker complexion, but that's not so. They kind of look like us, like Americans, and that's even scarier to the people of Fox.
And that goes right back to what I was saying earlier, is you never know if someone's Spanish unless you already know them. So we're a very insular town, and we attack a lot of intruders. You guys are lucky you emailed our webmaster before you came.
Yeah, we always email the local webmaster before we visit any town. And that's a little-known fact that I bet most of our listeners weren't aware of. We don't like to bore you with the nuts and bolts, the podcastery stuff, where we're constantly reaching out to webmasters all over the country so as to prevent preemptive deep net hacks on our RV.
Is there an instance where you got hacked because you didn't take that precaution?
Oh yeah, we learned the hard way. Many hacks early on. I think was it Moitz, Iowa?
Yeah, it was our very first town. The RV you're sitting in now, right now, Thumber, it used to be sort of a Knight Rider situation, like Kit, but the RV itself got too smart and too sentient. We had to just convert it back to normal.
Well, we don't have that VHS in the library, so I don't get the reference, but...
No, that's okay. Okay. It's fine. Not really necessary.
I'm sorry.
Did the RV just talk?
I thought we had seen this long ago, Elliot.
Wow.
Our listeners were never supposed to hear.
This is kind of terrifying. I think that we should keep people in the dark on this one, but shed some light on some different facts, Vince.
Absolutely. Thumbert, I will ask if you could have your webmaster send a remote hack to wipe the memory of this vehicle. That would be great.
Sure, let me just use the Rough Rider equivalent of a phone.
Hey! Hey! Look! Here I am with the door! Hey!
Thumbert is waving outside of the window of the RV right now at a man who seems to be about 10 feet away.
Oh, and that... Oh, and there's that man's taken off, and he's hooting and yelling, and he's cracking his whip.
Yep. There was a guy about 10 feet away from him. They're all stationed in a long daisy chain.
Yeah.
Well, that's okay. How the riders do it. Our horses don't have a lot of stamina. They can usually go about a dozen steps at a time, so we just line them up.
With that, lining things up, that's a perfect segue, our third attempt at it, into our final segue, our final segment. It's called A Did You Know?
Ironic that you messed up the final segue that we attempted, Vince.
It's not ironic at all.
Well, guys, Did You Know is our rapid-fire, fast-fact trivia segment firing five facts at you from whatever town we're in. Guys, I've got the first one.
Can't wait to hear it, Elliot.
Did you know that the people of Fox collectively had made it illegal to have a lisp in this town?
Interesting.
That's true. The Spanish language is notoriously lispous, and it's, you know, like we said, anyone can become Spanish at any time, and that's sort of the first sign. It's like when a zombie movie, when someone just gets kind of pale and they start scratching a bite, same thing.
When you start saying your S's as TH's, you know that there's going to be allegiance to the King of Spain, and that's the only reason the Spanish pretentiously have that lisp, because they didn't want the King of Spain to feel bad. So if you know anybody in this town, and I'm talking to the people of Fox right now, with a lisp, then please contact Thumbert and the local authorities.
If you hear something, smear something. That's what they say. It's keeping America safe.
It is. And Thumbert, do you have the next Did You Know fact for us?
I do. Did you know that the local library has the world's largest collection of dusty newspapers and editorials?
I love a good microfiche, so I'm glad that you brought that up. Now, I don't know if you knew that I was into microfiche when you brought up this Did You Know factoid, but please, let's hear about how you've cataloged these newspapers, because newspaper categorization is in my top five all-time favorite things.
Vince is kind of a fichophile.
Yeah, well, you know what, Tobit, let me just ask the archivist real quick.
Hi!
He's going to come in through the window. One second.
Oh, no. Yeah. Welcome.
Hello.
Oh, hello.
Hello, sir.
I am the archivist, Luke William Some Sauce, and I hear you wish to know how we sort the fish.
Yeah, I mean, this is true, sir. I'm kind of lukewarm about it. Vince really wants to know.
Well, it's quite simple. You've heard of the Dewey Decimal System?
Oh, I'm fond and familiar.
It's nothing like that. We take the 6 newspapers a day. We have filing cabinets with 6 folders. There is 1 filing cabinet for every day. We've been digging and digging and digging, and we just keep going further into the earth and buying more and more filing cabinets. The budget is enormous because the newspaper is very profitable. I must go now. Someone has an overdue copy of The Two Towers.
Thank you very much, Master Luke William.
Okay, I think you need a little assistance getting out of our window.
Let's lower him, Elliot, under the arms. You're gonna hurt his wrist.
Okay, all right. Okay.
He's an old man, Elliot. Come on.
Yeah, man, I just shoved him out like a sack of thick cut bacon. Oh man, he really hit the ground hard.
He's okay.
I'm okay.
Thumbert left for a second. He was refilling his hat with sarsaparilla, and he kind of pulled this gentleman's legs down. Just as an aside, for Vince's love of microfiche, I actually took Vince to a Fish concert once, and the entire time Vince was shouting out Dewey Decimals at Trey Anastasio on stage because he thought that I wanted to take him to a Fish concert. That's just how much his passions run deep.
So, you know, you have to kind of know the context for them to be Dewey Decimals because otherwise they're just decimals.
That's true.
You can tell when they have a certain deweyness to them. It's sort of the opposite of dust.
Well, guys, I didn't know that, but what a treat to know it now. Thanks again to Master Luke William. I will say, though, did you know that there are very strict curfews here in Fox, but they're not the ones you might expect?
Hmm. Can you elaborate, Vince?
I would love to. They're, in fact, reverse curfews, where you have to be out of the house doing things at certain points of the day, so as to prevent accidentally siestaing.
Wow. Interesting. So, as we all know, the Spanish love a good siesta.
Yes, time has proven it to be a medically relevant and intelligent sort of lifestyle to interact, but here in the United States of America, we have to be vigilant against Spanishism. So, no sleeping between the hours of 1 p.m. and 6 p.m. Also, no sleeping between the hours of 8 p.m. and 11 p.m. And also, just for some reason, 2 a.m. and 3 a.m. Also, you got to be out.
Oh, yeah. Everybody up at 2. Walk. Everybody up at 2. That's when we do our calisthenics.
So, Thumbert, are you guys stampeding around just continuously during these hours to make sure nobody dozes off?
Bingo. Yeah, that's you'll hear us stampeding around from 1 to 6, and that's why we throw the newspapers through the windows, because there's nothing like the sound of breaking glass to ruin a nap.
I've heard that most of the windows in this town are made out of that sort of candy glass that they use in Hollywood, so as to keep costs of refurbishment down.
Absolutely. That's the fourth biggest business in town after the Dusty Gazette, the soup, the other one I said, and now this one.
Wow, guys. Well, I didn't know that. But did you know that Fox has its own version of Mount Rushmore?
I did know that. I visit it weekly to pray to my ancestors.
So what is great about this, and I'm sure you'll know about this too, Thumb, is that the only reason Teddy Roosevelt is on Mount Rushmore is because he was president at the time, and he demanded that he be on it. But the other great thing he did during this time was that he brought over Salvador Dali and Pablo Picasso, and he commissioned them as sort of a peace treaty to build and sculpt a different monument out in Fox. He only gave it to them piecemeal, and it ended up being they were sculpting themselves as the Three Stooges.
Yeah, that one takes a lot of explaining when tourists come through. They
like just see. Yeah, the plaque on this thing is gigantic. It's almost as big as the monument.
Yeah, we had a visitor the other day, and they came by and they said, "Excuse me, I was driving through the town, and I think I saw a piecemeal image of Pablo Picasso wearing like a painter's uniform next to like a bald guy and a guy with only hair on the side of his head, and they were like tipping over a ladder, but it was carved into a mountain." And I said, "Well, that's just history, damn it." And I rode them down with my horse.
I mean, in your defense, if they can't be bothered to stand around for a few hours reading a plaque, could easily answer their questions about this monument. And I don't know what else there is for it.
It's like, what do you want? What's more patriotic than Salvador Dali and Pablo Picasso as the Three Stooges in honor of Theodore Roosevelt?
I think it just, like, really sticks it to Spain, don't you?
Oh, they were pissed. Oh, we got a very strongly worded letter from Spain when we put that baby up. Oh, boy.
And you got also a letter from Pablo Picasso that is framed up at the monument, but you can't read it because it's just a bunch of squares and triangles.
Yeah, he took his thing way too far. It's like, what, are you gonna not communicate?
Well, that's fascinating. Do you have the last did you know fact for us, Thumbert?
I do. Did you know that down at the local Pie Yeehaw, if you order the Thumbert special, I emerge from the back and run you down with a horse?
Oh, see, I love when we give the guests a little chance to plug their own things. You know, it's kind of a, you scratch my back, we'll scratch yours.
So Thumbert, is this if you order, what is the Thumbert special, or is the Thumbert special you running them down with a horse?
The latter.
So that's on the menu, written out similar to the plaque at the Fox Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, it's very popular because a lot, see, everyone wants to be in the Rough and Rumbly Routers, and the way you're initiated into the group is someone in the group runs you down with the horse. So mothers will bring their sons to Pie Yeehaw and say, why don't you get the Thumbert special, hon? And they'll say, Mom, I know what that is. And she'll be like, well, don't you want to be a rough router like your dad? And then, you know, then they put in the order and, you know, they get their first taste of hoof. It's like sort of a rite of passage.
Charming, fascinating, illuminating. All words to describe the history-steeped city of Fox, South Carolina. And you, sir, a patriot in a long line of patriots, thanks so much, Thumbert, Bartholomew, Roosevelt, for joining us and for taking time out of your busy rough ride and stampede and schedule to talk to us a little bit about history.
Well, thank you very much for having me. Our webmaster will send you an invoice for your subscription to the Dusty Gazette. It is not cheap, so save up.
Well, we are very apt at contributing to the local economies of different towns, and we want to contribute one more thing to this episode in a segment we call Wish You Were Here.
So listeners, Wish You Were Here is our audio postcard into the past, where we speak to our great-great-grandfather, thanking him for his guidance on this following footsteps journey, and in turn, saying thank you to the town that we visited. It goes a little something like this. Dear Rand, wish you were here in Fox, South Carolina.
A town that hates Spain as much as it loves America.
A town that hates pigs as much as it loves horses.
A town that hates paella as much as it loves pies.
A town that you can read a dusty newspaper in, get a giant stack of freedom tapas, or simply not lisp.
A town where from 2 to 3 a.m. everyone joins together in a series of patriotic jumping jacks and destroying dry cakes.
And a town that you could look to for a little bit of guidance on how to find out the facts about the world we live in.
Farewell from these parts to yours.